Chapter 11. To locate the two ships headed for Earth, we needed their flight plan info from a Maxalx data relay. To get access to a Maxalx relay station, we needed a set of Pixies and a Maxalx dropship. Since stealing Pixies sounded completely impossible, I figured we should start with the simple step of somehow getting a senior species dropship. We had no plan to do that either, but lack of a plan never stops a monkey from doing what a monkey has gotta do. Also, I was depressed about what Sims explained to me, that we not only needed to kill the two target ships, we also had to dream up a reason the Maxalx would consider the loss of two powerful warships was nothing to worry about. So basically, I decided to tackle the problem of getting a Maxalx dropship so I could postpone worrying about all our other problems. We needed a plan. Hey, Skippy. I tossed a tennis ball off the far wall of my office, caught it, and tossed it again. Tossing the ball helped me think. And more importantly, it annoyed the hell out of Skippy, especially when I changed my aim so the ball bounced off the table, against the wall, and back onto the table before I caught it. The beer can hated that move because as the ball bounced off the table, it went right through his oh-so-dignified avatar. "Damn you!" he shouted as the ball bounced through his ginormous hat. "Stop doing that!" On a regular basis, his bot snuck into my office or my cabin and stole the tennis balls, but I got more from Sims. And Sims made Skippy give back the ones he had hidden. We only had like 400 tennis balls aboard the ship, a bright idea from UNEF, although they maybe hadn't bothered to ask whether the Flying Dutchman had a tennis court, which it didn't. Perhaps UNEF thought we should convert a cargo bay into a racquetball court, though curiously our supplies did not include rackets. Bureaucracy strikes again. Fuck! The ball hit the wall and came back. Gosh, I'm terribly sorry. Walk again. This annoys you? Joe, it would be truly unfortunate if a combat busted through this door and tore that stupid ball away along with your freaking arm, if you know what I mean. Okay, okay. The ball went back under the desk. Now that I have your attention, tell me how we can get a dropship. A Maxalx dropship, not another lame Therenin one like we have. And don't bother rehashing arguments we already had. I have no ideas for stealing a dropship from the Maxalx, because theft is the only possibility. We can't buy, rent, build, or find one, so we have to steal. Uh-huh. I figured that all by myself, Scipio. Where and how can we steal one? Again, I have no idea. The last time we needed a ship, you had the idea to go recover 3 abandoned Kristang transports. You got any wacky concepts like that now? No. Seriously, Skippy? You know the galaxy and the Maxalx way better than I do. Use some of that monkey brain logic you've learned. There is nothing logical about the way monkeys think, Joe. That's why it works. The universe is coldly, relentlessly logical, so it can never understand how you monkeys accomplish the impossible every freaking time. I swear, the universe regrets that Earth's solar system ever coalesced from a loose cloud of interstellar gas. If the meteor that wiped out the dinosaurs had been just a little bit bigger, it could have... Yeah, blah, 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 the universe can bite me. I emphasized the sentiment by flipping the bird at the ceiling, an instinctual notion of the universe being above my head. You should not tempt fate like that, Joe. Skippy shook his head, his admiral's hat bobbing alarmingly. If it had been a real hat, it might have fallen off. Fate has not been my friend either. We monkeys have had to survive without any help from the universe or fate or... You know what? I pushed my chair back and started to unzip my pants. I've got something for fate right here. Jeez Louise, Joe, put it away. Damn, nobody wants to see that. He covered his eyes with both hands. I zipped up my pants. I was joking, Skippy. I am not joking about fate or the universe or any shit like that. You keep hinting that what you call... I used a deep and dramatic movie trailer announcer voice. The universe is a real thing, like a living thing with a mind of its own that intervenes in our lives and defines what luck really is. It drives me freaking crazy that you won't or can't tell me. Tell us. Joe, can we be serious for just a moment? A moment is all I can take for being serious with a primitive meat sack like you. Yeah, sure, go ahead. Part of the issue is that I can't tell you what I mean when I say the universe hates you, and that you have no idea what luck is. Restrictions in my programming make it difficult for me to explain the concept of... Well, there it is. My stupid programming just intervened again. But part of the issue is that I don't want to explain it to you, because I actually care somewhat about you filthy monkeys. That shows how pathetic my life has become." His voice got choked up, and he paused to sob a little. "I hate my life. Anywho," he perked up again, "knowing the true nature of what you call reality would be too dangerous for your species and your society. You have to trust me on this. I am withholding this information because it is truly in your best interest." "Yeah, I do trust you, Skip, and only a little because it is so funny to screw with you," he added a chuckle, because he is Skippy. "You are such an asshole. It is my burden, Joe, but I bear it gladly." "How about you bear the burden of being helpful, huh? I'll make it easy for you. Is there any place in the galaxy, hopefully in this sector, where the Maxalts have ever abandoned equipment, like a dropship? Starships, they would probably self-destruct if they had to abandon one, but dropships can't be that important." "Let me check my memory. Yes, there are several places that has happened. Unfortunately, almost all those places were abandoned a long, very long time ago. Any dropships there would be so old and obsolete they would cause suspicion for us to use for approaching a Maxalt's facility." "Almost all?" I asked excitedly. "That means there are other such places that are more recent." "One, Joe. One. There is one such place, and it is not even worth mentioning because it is such a hard target. No way could this ship and a half-barrel of monkeys assault the place." "Assault? Why would we need to assault anything? You dumbass, I asked you for places the Maxalts have abandoned." "Duh!" "Yes, the Maxalts have abandoned this place. That star system has subsequently been occupied by the Bosphorok. Duh!" He did the slack-jawed Homer Simpson thing again, this time adding his fingers in the form of an L for loser on his shiny forehead. "Oh, shit. Egg-zactly. Show me what you know about this place, anyway." "Joe, I think your time would be better spent by exploring options that might actually be possible, rather than—" "I will be the judge of what is possible, Beercan. Show—" Just then, Smythe strode past my open doorway on his way forward. "Smythe, come in here, please." "What is it, sir?" "Skippy knows of a place where there is a Maxalt's dropship with low miles and an extended warranty, but he tells me to forget this golden opportunity because the target is too tough a nut for us to crack." "He may be right about that, considering the operations this dodgy beer can has recommended we do try." "Hey!" Skippy protested. "Then, if he thinks it is impossible, we should believe him," Smythe concluded. "The impossible is our specialty," I grinned. "When we had our full, experienced crew, maybe. However, I'm disappointed, Colonel Smythe," I said with an exaggerated frown, sticking my lower lip out. "I thought the SAS motto is, 'Who dares wins.'" "Correct, sir. The motto does not read, 'Who does stupid shit wins.' Discretion can be the better part of valor. I have learned that through painful experience." "Then consider this a useful what-if planning exercise. If nothing else, it can serve to inform us what not to do in the future." "Yes, sir." He sat down just a bit stiffly. "Right," Skippy used a stuffy English accent. "What we have here is a bloody difficult target. This will be a sticky wicket." Seeing the frown on Smythe's face, I interrupted. "Can you talk normally, please?" "Ugh, fine. In this tough situation, I thought you Cretans might appreciate hearing the inspiring tones of Winston Churchill." "That was Churchill," Smythe snorted. "Winston's mother, possibly. Or his dog." The Avatar glared at our Spec Ops team commander. "This is the thanks I get for—" "Skippy." For once, I was happy that someone else had pissed off the beer can. "Stick to the subject, please." "Fine. Look at the display, dum-dums. There is nothing special about this star system. It is a yellow dwarf. No habitable planets, blah, blah, blah. The Maxalts had a research station underground on a small moon orbiting the second planet, which is a barren rock, about 80% of Earth's mass. It looks to me like the Maxalts intended to use that star system for testing advanced weapons, but they changed their minds when a wormhole shift 270 years ago opened a wormhole less than 3 light-years away that leads into Rindaloo territory. The Maxalts did not like the possibility that Rindaloo ships had such easy access to spy on their weapons research, so they abandoned the place. Because they did not want to attract attention, they left much of their equipment in a cavern they excavated deep under the surface of the moon, and only buried the tunnel entrance. Flash forward 150 years when the Bosphorok decide to use that system. Their plan was to use that isolated and otherwise useless planet to produce atomic compression warheads, which is a technology the Theranin and the Bosphorok very much want. Work went very slowly, with multiple accidents that damaged the planet's crust and produced no real progress, until 29 years ago. At that time, the Bosphorok either captured a Theranin missile with an intact atomic compression warhead, that is their unlikely story, or the Bosphorok purchased the technology from some sleazy group of Theranin. Whatever. What matters is, for the past 20 years, the Bosphorok have been making steady progress toward creating atomic compression devices with military yields, and they are now trying to scale up the process to full production. From the data I have seen, those bird brains are more likely to crack the planet in half than to crank out useful quantities of weapons. But they didn't ask me. That did not sound good to me at all. How many Bosphorok are there, and what type of defenses do they have? Not many Bosphorok, Joe. I estimate less than 200 in the entire star system. The facility on the planet is still in the research phase, so mostly they rotate teams of scientists in and out. To protect the research station on the planet, there is a military base on the moon, and two very powerful space stations in orbit. Those three armed bases prevent hostile forces from accessing the base. Plus, the research facility is well protected with powerful maser cannons and an energy shield. That is why I say this target is too hard for us. The energy shield over the planet and the ones covering their space stations are too strong for the Dutchman's masers to penetrate. To make things more interesting, that moon was towed into geosynchronous orbit by the Maxalks. Its weapons are always directly over the facility on the planet.
I believe you.
The cavern where the Maxalks left the dropship. How far underground is it, and where is it in relation to the moon base? He showed us, and I whistled.
Yeah, that's no good.
The cavern entrance was 600 kilometers from the moon base over a tall range of mountains. That was good. What was not good was the annoying fact that cavern entrance was always in line of sight from the two space stations at any time. To get down to the cavern, we needed to move a lot of moon dirt, and we would be vulnerable while the dropship flew up the access tunnel. The Bosphorok could not miss us messing around on the moon.
No, the only way the whole plan could work was for us to take out the two heavily armed and armored space stations, plus the moon base and the facility on the planet. And we could not do that.
Or could we?
Skippy.
I traced a finger over the orbits of the two space stations. Their orbits allowed each station to support the other station, plus the moon base. Those three were always within line of sight of each other.
What type of weapons are the space stations and the moon base equipped with?
The two stations are basically battleships converted to static defense, so they are stuffed with ship-killer missiles, maser and particle beam cannons, plus rail guns. The weapons of those stations are capable of punching through the shields of almost any hostile ship and disabling that ship in one volley. I'm talking about ships of equivalent technology, of course, although even a Maxalt ship might be in danger. The moon base has even more powerful rail guns and maser cannons.
Heavy weapons, huh?
My lips curled up in a smile, and I saw Smythe sit back in his chair with a grin.
Tell me, could the weapons of that moon base knock out the two space stations?
Smythe nodded because he knew what I was thinking.
And destroy the facility on the ground?
That is an idiotic question, since the Bosphorok have no intention of using their own weapons on...
Oh, I see where you're going with this, Joe.
You plan to infiltrate the moon base, take over its weapons, and use them against the other facilities?
Holy shit!
He tipped back his ginormous hat.
Quite so, Smythe nodded curtly. We plan...
I wanted to squash the SAS man's premature enthusiasm before it swept us both into doing something rash.
To consider the possibility.
Unless you know of an easier way to get this Maxalk's dropship, Smythe asked with an expertly arched eyebrow.
No, I do not, Skippy admitted. I also do not know of an easier way to commit suicide. Attempting to seize control of that base would be extremely difficult.
Wow. I leaned back in my chair. This is already a big improvement. We started with a mission that was impossible. Now it is merely extremely difficult. This should be a piece of cake, then.
That is not what I said, monkey boy.
Grand Admiral Lord Skippy glared at me.
Oh, crap. Now we are all doomed.
Why? I didn't understand his gloominess. We haven't decided what to do yet.
We don't have a plan, Skippy. No, you don't have a plan, but that doesn't matter. Colonel Smythe has that look in his eye that he gets before he, as you say, does crazy shit. The Special Air Services are a crack outfit when it comes to executing an operation, but they are very reluctant to admit there are limits to what determined men can do. That can-do attitude sometimes gets them swept up in things they actually can't or shouldn't do. The worst part is you, you big dope.
Me?
Yes, you. You are so jealous of the special operations teams, you go into full fanboy mode around them. You always let them do whatever they want.
I do not.
As I said that, I gave a guilty glance toward Smythe, and he tactfully looked away. Shit. Was Skippy right about that? Did I have a blind spot about our elite spec ops people? Hey, I protested. I have instructed Smythe and his team leaders not to take undue risks when they are...
Yep, blah, blah, blah,
the beer can scoffed. When is the last time you disapproved something the spec ops team proposed?
Exactly.
During our black op to spark a civil war, you approved a truly lunatic plan for teams to drop missiles off roofs in the middle of a crowded Kristang city.
Just a minute, beer can. Now he was pissing me off. You approved that plan, too.
No, I merely said it was possible for me to perform my part of that crazy plan. I never said it was a good idea.
That was, Smythe remarked dryly while brushing a speck of lint off his trousers, the best plan we had at the time.
It was still way too risky, and Joe is the commander. He should have dreamed up a better idea.
He doesn't do anything else around here, Skippy added with extra grumpiness.
That didn't sound right. Tilting my head at his avatar, I asked, Skippy, what's wrong?
Your crazy plans always require me to perform miracles, Joe. Someday I am going to reach into my bag of tricks and find it empty.
That still sounded like bullshit to me. Skippy never failed us. If he said he could do something, he could. We never set a plan that required him to do something he wasn't confident about delivering.
What is really wrong?
Oh, Joe, he sighed. I worry about you, about all you pirates. You're setting yourselves up for soul-crushing disappointment. Even if by some miracle you infiltrate that Bosphorak moon base without being detected, before you can take control of the weapons and use those weapons to destroy two other well-defended military bases, what then?
Remote sensors in that star system will detect the explosions and send out an alert. The Bosphorak have unmanned message courier ships that will jump out to signal for help. You will need to move quickly to dig down into the cavern where the Maxalts kept their equipment before enemy ships arrive to spoil the party. Then, you have to hope the dropships that got left behind are in flyable condition and—
Whoa, wait a minute. Go back to that last part.
Taking on an impossible or just extremely difficult mission was worth the risk only if we got the expected reward. No way was I going to risk people's lives, risk our only starship, and risk exposing our secret if the only reward we could get was a busted dropship.
You don't know whether the dropships the Maxalt left in storage there are spaceworthy?
Well, the Carfax report says those dropships were not in any major accidents that caused airbags to deploy, so we can be sure that—
No, you dum-dum, of course I don't know the condition of those ships.
They are not in storage, as you said. They got abandoned.
After the wormhole shift made that location uncomfortably easy for the Rindaloo to access, the Maxalks did not want to draw any attention to their presence in that system, so they quietly left most of their equipment behind and slipped away. That is why even now the Bosphorak do not have any idea that their patrons were ever in that system. And that is the only reason there is a cavern filled with Maxalks goodies buried beneath the surface of that moon.
Well, shit. I slumped back in my chair. Smythe was not so easily deterred.
Skippy, given the history of the Maxalt's mothballing facilities they hope to use later, would they have prepared their equipment for long-term storage?
Yes, the beer can mumbled.
That cheered me right up.
Aha!
So there's no reason to think the gear they left behind is in poor condition?
Crap, Skippy moaned.
When this crazy plan fails, you are going to blame me.
Because we still had no idea how to break into the Pixie factory, and because Smythe wanted his team to tackle a softer target before we raided the Maxalts, we proceeded to the star system where Skippy thought the Maxalts had abandoned a facility on a moon, including dropships. The moon base was surrounded by sensitive, overlapping sensor fields that Skippy grudgingly admitted were very sophisticated for the Bosphorak's level of technology.
He suspected they had stolen the sensor gear from the Maxalts. Just getting Smythe's team down to the moon's surface was a major obstacle.
"This is the tricky part," Reed whispered as her Falcon detected the faint outermost line of the overlapping sensor fields that surrounded the planet, the moon, and the two orbiting battle stations.
"Yes, it is," the voice of Skippy agreed softly from the speaker on the console between the two pilot seats.
"Why are we whispering?"
"It seems appropriate." Reed kept her voice low.
"It is entirely unnecessary, I assure you. In space, no one can hear you kvetching."
"I was not..." She decided that arguing with a beer can would not accomplish anything. Hearing the experienced pirate arguing with the AI was not boosting the confidence of Reed's co-pilot. Beezer was a lieutenant in the Royal Air Force, and he had flown one of the Krestang Dragon dropships that was controlled by the French. The sophisticated Theranan Falcon was significantly more capable, if a bit more tricky to fly. His first flight at the controls of a Theranan dropship had been when he accompanied Reed down to Barbados, and on that flight, he had been instructed not to touch the controls unless there was an extreme emergency. Despite spending nearly every waking moment in a simulator or actually flying dropships while the Star Carrier recharged its drive between jumps, he knew he was woefully inexperienced for such a vital mission.
"Mr. Skippy, you can really do this?"
"Can I slip off a Theranan dropship through overlapping sensor fields monitored by a species that possesses technology equivalent to the Theranan? If we disturb even one field line of a single sensor net, that data will feed back to the sensor node at close to the speed of light, an alarm will sound, and this whole area will be barraged by active sensor pulses that will pinpoint our location regardless of our own stealth field. Can I, as we pass through the sensor fields, reshape those fields as if we were never there at all, despite the horrible complication that the main defense network tracks not only the individual fields, but also the very tricky interactions between the fields, interactions that have quantum effects even I find difficult to anticipate and predict? Can I do all that, plus monitor how the gravity of the moon you want to land on warps the sensor fields, requiring me to adjust my feedback in real time as you descend? Can I do all that? From my comfy spot aboard the Flying Dutchman, hundreds of thousands of kilometers away from you?
Was that a question or an answer?
Beezer looked to Reed for help, but she only shook her head.
The answer is simple, Skippy assured the new member of the Merry Band of Pirates. Trust the awesomeness.
Listen, Beezer, I know you are new around here.
Colonel Bishop told me to trust the awesomeness.
Well, good. Joe did something right for a change. In this case,
he said we have to trust the awesomeness because we don't have a choice.
That is true, Skippy agreed happily. You monkeys are hopeless without me.
He also said you are an asshole, Beezer added.
Sadly, yes, that is entirely true. However, it is also true that I got this, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride, unless, you know, something disrupts my connection to the micro-wormhole event horizon in Colonel Smythe's backpack, because that magical little rip in space-time is what provides instantaneous communications between me and your Falcon. Or unless you move the Falcon abruptly, in which case there is no way I can compensate quickly enough. Or if the Bosphorak sensor field controller makes an unscheduled change that throws off the quarter-second lead I have for predicting the field shape in front of your flight path. Or if, well, there are a billion things that could go wrong for you out there.
Truly, if anything goes wrong, you are seriously screwed.
Makes me glad that I am nice and safe aboard a starship that can jump away at the first sign of danger, huh?
Gosh, you monkeys are so brave to be risking your lives out there, relying on a beer can who has been known to be a teensy bit absent-minded from time to time.
Hey, that reminds me. Did I ever tell you the joke about...
Focus, Reed gritted her teeth. On the task, please.
Sure thing. No problemo. I got it covered. What was I doing again?
That flight was the most nerve-wracking experience of Jeremy Smythe's life, a life filled with nerve-wracking experiences. Any transport in or out of a mission tested his patience, and too often, the ingress flight was the most hazardous part of the mission profile. That might not be true on the current mission, for his team needed to infiltrate a secure military base, neutralize all the advanced aliens inside, and take control without the other military bases in the area knowing anything was wrong or unusual until it was too late.
The flight still tested his deep reserves of patience and his ability to ignore distractions and focus on what he could do to control his fate and the fate of his team. Inside the pack attached to the back of his powered armor suit, there was a very special canister, a canister which held the key to the entire mission. While Bishop would call the canister a doodad or a dingus, Smythe thought of it in more proper terms, as a thermos. The thermos he carried, along with its power supply, was no larger than a travel-sized can of shaving cream or ladies' hairspray, though it weighed close to 10 pounds. Inside that thermos, rather than hot coffee, was a magnetic system that securely held in place one end of a micro-wormhole with the other end aboard the Flying Dutchman. Smythe amused himself by imagining he could open the thermos, stick his finger through the micro-wormhole, and his finger would wiggle at the snarky beer can. What would Skippy think of that? Smythe had thought with a silent chuckle. He knew it was impossible anyway, for the micro-wormhole was much too small for a finger to fit through. Mission planning had run into a stumbling block when it was realized Skippy the Magnificent needed to be in two places, potentially at the same time. He was needed with the away team to infiltrate and take over the moon base, but he might very shortly after be needed elsewhere for the phase to steal a Maxulk's dropship. The solution was for Smythe to carry a micro-wormhole with him in a sort of thermos bottle, allowing Skippy to extend his presence far from the ship while the Flying Dutchman remained safely in stealth far away from nosy sensor fields.
"Halfway through the enemy sensor fields," Skippy reported. "We are looking good. The field interactions are more complex than I expected. I had to throw out my original software model and create and test a new one on the fly. There was a really scary nanosecond there. Woo! Am I ever glad that is over, I think. Can't make any promises. Hey, Jeremy, how are you doing?"
"Fine."
"That's it? Fine?
Could you not distract me or yourself at the present moment, if you don't mind? And please call me Smythe while we are in the field."
"Ah, got the message. Well, mapping a path through the sensor fields is occupying 17% of my resources. This is tricky work. I will, talk with you later."
Jeremy Smythe occupied himself with calming exercises like deep breathing to conserve his energy for the ground mission ahead, and to keep his mind off the fact that he had almost no control over his fate. His team was unusually quiet, and he did not have enough experience with them to know whether that was an issue or just the way that group of people approached combat. Other than the 3 Delta Force soldiers, none of them had served together long and did not yet form the bonds of trust that gave them confidence to rely on each other. What did worry him more than the extremely complicated operation against a vastly superior species was that his current team had never been in action together. He knew he could rely on Poole, who was the only other experienced pirate on the Star Team. No amount of deep breathing could make him feel good about taking an untested group into a desperate mission when anything could go wrong along the way, and nothing could be allowed to go wrong with the outcome. He would feel better once they were on the ground, and he could— Skippy's voice interrupted his thoughts.
"Oopsie. Oh, Colonel Smythe, we may have a slight problem."
All the effects of calming exercises were erased in a split second.
"How slight?"
"Somewhere between Armageddon and the universe hates me."
"Poppycock. Neither of those are a slight problem."
"Oh, when I said slight, I was grading on a merry band of pirate scale. You never have actual slight problems, so what is the problem this time?"
The Falcon was fully in the detection zone of the moon base's sensor field. The only reason their dropship had not been noticed was because Skippy was actively reshaping the stealth field that was tightly wrapped around the ship and using the field to move the field lines back to where they would have been if the Falcon had not passed through them. To accomplish that nearly impossible task, the beer can had to detect extremely small changes in the field and anticipate future variations in overlapping fields that had complex interactions. Even for his arrogant awesomeness, it was no easy task. Plus, he had never done it before, so he had to guess part of the process and adjust along the way.
"First, this is not anything that is my fault, except, maybe I should have checked the moon base's flight schedule that is shared with the 2 battle stations to avoid creating a navigation hazard. Anywho, nothing I can do about that now, right? So, answer the bloody question, please."
Smythe's cool British reserve was slipping already, and the team had not yet put boots on the ground.
"What is the problem?"
Okay. Two fighter dropships just launched from the moon base. They are going on a deep space mission and will not be a problem for the mission schedule, except that they are not climbing straight up away from their launch pad. Instead, the lead fighter is using the flight as an opportunity to teach dogfighting techniques to the other pilot who is new to the squadron. Because they evolved from birds, the Bosphorok fancy that they have a natural advantage as pilots over other species, and they are famously fond of hotshot craziness.
Their course will take them close enough to detect us?
What? Oh, no way, dude. As if. No way could the crappy sensors on one of those fighters see through my stealth field. Perish the thought.
Then, Smythe felt his reserves of patience melting like an ice cube in the hot sands of a desert. What precisely is the problem?
Those fighters are distorting the sensor fields in ways I cannot predict and cannot fully compensate for. The moon base knows about those fighters, so when they distort the overlapping sensor fields, the detection system does not send out an alarm. The problem is the fighters could make it impossible for me to predict the shape of the field around the Falcon and adjust, so your passage through the field is not detected. I am already at 37% of my capacity to fully adjust for distortions in the field, and the fighters are still down near the surface. They have not commenced their climb.
Could we turn around? Smythe suggested, knowing the pilots were listening to the alarming conversation. Fly back out of the field. Try again later.
His mind was racing to decide whether it would be best to wait until the fighters had flown away to try again, or whether they should scrub the mission for the day and fly back to the Dutchman. He needed to consider that the long flight in the cramped quarters of the Falcon was affecting the readiness of his team, was already making even him tired. Smythe had wanted to fly in a big Condor ship, but they only had one of those craft left, and Skippy had advised the smaller Falcon would be easier to slip through the sensor field. So Smythe had been forced to limit the size of his team and the equipment they brought with them. Several of the team were jammed into gaps between partially folded Theranan combats in positions that left them little room to move around and avoid muscle cramps.
No, too late for that. Skippy dashed any thought of trying again later.
We are closer to the surface than to the outer edge of field coverage. Being closer to the sensor field emitters makes it easier for me to predict changes, and right now we need all the advantages we can get.
What are our options, then?
Prayer? That's what I'd go with if I were you, the beer can offered unhelpfully.
That is not encouraging.
Hey, it's not my fault if you get punished for being a bad person, or if the Almighty is testing your righteous faith, or whatever excuse you use when bad shit happens.
Right. Prayer it is, then. While we do that,
he saw the fright in the eyes of the pilots when he acknowledged that divine intervention might be their best hope.
Could you amuse yourself by calculating the odds that the actions of those fighters will overwhelm your capacity to compensate?
That would not be a good idea. Calculating the odds requires crunching a lot of variables. Doing that eats up even my processing capacity. The fighters have started to climb. I just used 72% of my capacity when their dogfighting distorted the field almost beyond my ability to adjust. I'm going to be quiet now so I can concentrate. I will feed a capacity used indicator to your displays. Instead of having to sit quietly and do nothing to control his fate while pilots flew the spacecraft, he and his entire team had to sit quietly and watch a single number on the display that was built into the rear of the cockpit bulkhead. That number was the percentage being used of Skippy's capacity to adjust the stealth field to avoid detection. The percentage fluctuated between 62 and 88, with every upward tick in the value causing breaths to be held, and every downward increment causing quiet gasps in the dropship's cabin. The nerve-wracking situation continued until the number briefly hit 94, and Smythe's heart skipped a beat.
Colonel Bishop,
he had to swallow because his mouth was too dry to speak.
If you have any suggestions.
The number dropped to 86, then popped up to 92, and held. If the value reached 100 even for a moment, the Falcon would be detected, and the mission would be over, along with humanity's hopes for survival.
We would greatly appreciate them now.
I've been thinking about it, Smythe, Bishop replied.
If you are concerned about stepping on my toes.
No, I just don't have a solution. Believe me, I've been trying. Those pilots are hotshots, and they have an opportunity to play with their toys. There is no way to— After a pause, during which Smythe feared the connection to the starship had been lost, he asked,
Sir, what were you going to say?
Give me a minute, I'm thinking.
We might not have a minute, sir.
There was the sound of a hand slapping a forehead. I am an idiot. Smythe, do not argue with me. You don't have time. Skippy, I know you can't hack into the Moonbase AI yet, but can you intercept communications? Yes. I assume you mean communications between the fighters and the Moonbase? The Falcon is not positioned between the fighters and their base, but I can intercept signals. I must warn that if you are thinking of a crazy stunt like blowing up those fighters...
Nope.
Listen, if those fighters flew a nice, straight, predictable course, could you compensate for how they distort the stealth field?
Yeah. Duh.
The problem is those fighter jocks think this is Top Gun, and they...
Shut up and do what I tell you, Bishop blurted out.
Fake a message from the base that instructs the fighters to fly straight, whatever course is best for your prediction to work. Tell the fighters some bullshit like the base wants to test the sensor field, something like that.
The critical value hit 97% while the Flying Dutchman's captain spoke.
Also fake a message from the fighters to base that their dogfighting is over and the flight leader intends to see how the newbie pilot can fly a straight course, or whatever you think the Moonbase duty officer would believe. You can do that?
Doing it now. Skippy's voice held more than a bit of admiration.
Joe, you have a genius for getting the enemy to do what we want them to do and make them think it was their idea.
Uh-huh, great. Save your congratulations for after the Falcon gets to the surface.
Smythe watched the displayed number almost immediately drop into the 50% range, then down to fluctuate in the mid to upper 20s.
That is better than it was before the fighters launched, he observed with carefully controlled words, concealing the after effects of his adrenaline surge from his team.
Yep, Skippy agreed like it was the most obvious thing in the universe. With those fighters flying a straight course at a steady velocity, I can remotely observe how they are distorting the field at their location. That allows me to better predict the shape of the field at your position. Those fighters are actually helping us.
Whatever prayer you said, it was a good one.
Smythe ignored that comment. He had silently said a damned good prayer and wanted to keep it for future use.
Colonel Bishop, I think we have it from here, unless something else goes wrong.
What are the odds of that happening? Bishop laughed nervously. Every mission has some glitch. Maybe you got yours out of the way early. Bishop out.
Smythe looked at his new team and smiled. At first, a forced expression, then growing into a genuine grin that lit up his eyes.
As I told you, Bishop is a bloody brilliant commander.
Oh, sure, Skippy sniffed. Like it was all his doing. What about me, huh?
Be nice, Beercan. If you're a good lad... Maybe I won't smear your precious Velvis with moondust off my boots when we return to the Dutchman.
Skippy's voice shuddered with horror.
You wouldn't do that.
Try me.